From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The United Nations this week released its latest emissions gap report. And by their own assessments, researchers called the findings bleak. About 4 years ago, country representatives from all over the world gathered in Paris, France, for the COP21 climate meeting at which the historic Paris Accord was signed. But as soon as he entered office, President Donald Trump pledged to pull the United States out of the modest agreement. And under his rule, greenhouse gas emissions by the U.S. have noticeably risen. China has also increased emissions instead of leveling or reducing them. According to the report, countries collectively failed to stop the growth in global greenhouse gas emissions, meaning that deeper and faster cuts are now required. The next UN climate conference, COP25, takes place December 2nd in Madrid, Spain. We turn now to Tanu Yakupitiage. She is the US communications manager with 350.org. Welcome to the program, Tanu.
Thanks for having me.
So the last time you and I spoke, there were these massive global climate strikes taking place all over the world, including here in the U.S. Clearly, people around the world are terrified about what's happening on climate change. They want their governments to take action. And this report seems to show that, largely speaking, overall, the opposite has happened. How do you assess the findings of the emissions gap report?
Yeah, absolutely. And my first question to politicians, including Trump and other world leaders, is how many reports is this going to take for people to really recognize what is happening? Last year, the IPCC report said clearly that we have less than 11 years to really reduce warming to below 1.5 degrees Celsius. The emissions gap report that was released shows that with current country pledges, the world is heading for a 3.2 degrees Celsius temperature by 2100. And G20 nations account for about 78% of all emissions. And this is not the only report that's come out in the last week or so. There was also the World Meteorological Report that shows that the concentration of climate heating greenhouse gases has hit a record high with no sign of slowdown, let alone a decline, despite all commitments under the Paris Climate Agreement. And the Production Gap Report that was released on November 20th shows that the world is on track to produce more fossil fuels by 2030, which would actually, you know, is one of the reasons why we would get to about 3.2 degrees Celsius. Like, this is an absolute crisis. And the reason why millions have took the streets is because if the people the people understand that this is a really stark reality. Already across the world, we are feeling climate impact. This is not something in the future. This is in the present. And world leaders need to wake up.
Some have pointed out that it's like being in a burning house and throwing fuel on the fire that is burning our house down.
Absolutely. It truly is. And again, I think that it is very clear what needs to happen. We need to phase out fossil fuels immediately. This has been the work of 350.org for 10 years. And this is what all communities are calling for. This is no longer a question of negotiations between countries. The fossil fuel industry has lied to the public for decades, and they should pay for the climate crisis that we are in. They should pay for lack of accountability, and they should pay for the fact that from the wildfires in California to devastating hurricanes that hit all parts of the Northeast, our communities are being impacted. All over the world, we're seeing these impacts.
The emissions gap report by the United Nations points out that the top two carbon emitters are, of course, China and the United States, which has been the case for a long time. Now, China, in absolute terms, emits the most carbon when it comes to per capita. It's the U.S. So those two countries, does the report point out that those two countries have specifically, just on their own, increased their emissions, which has driven global emissions increase?
I can't speak towards China, but in the case of the U.S., particularly given Trump's policies, there is an increase in emissions. You know, even his recent push to stop, you know, automobile standards, this is all increasing emissions. And so, you know, these reports aren't lying. These are peer-reviewed scientific studies that are really demonstrating who's at fault, which countries are should be held accountable, and where the there's a gap between commitments and what actually needs to happen. And the U.S. and China have a lot to be responsible for.
Are other countries meeting their climate commitments? I mean, I mentioned the U.S., I mean, the Paris Accord, which happened 4 years ago, was signed, you know, very triumphantly. Climate activists were not happy because it was far too modest, did not go nearly far enough. But even mm-hmm. that very modest agreement that had voluntary commitments from countries, if we set aside the U.S. and China, is there any progress, any reason for optimism?
Well, I think the issue is that the Paris Climate Agreement didn't go far enough in the first place, right? And the emissions gap report really shows that now we're at a situation where we need to go above and beyond the Paris Climate Agreement. There's talking about the Paris Climate Agreement at this point is actually talking about way too much in the past. Like, we need to be setting new standards for what it will take to it's not even solving the climate crisis at this point. It's actually just slowing it down. It's going to require that we phase out fossil fuels immediately. It's going to require that nations like go above and beyond the Paris Climate Accord. And so, you know, I think even the question of like whether they have succeeded in meeting the goals of the Paris Climate Agreement, certainly some countries have, but that's not enough.
Now, the so just specifically speaking to that, the report estimates that if we wanted to limit global warming to below 2 degrees Celsius by the year 2030, that means just in 10 years, we would need to reduce emissions by 25%. That's a quarter. And if we wanted to limit to 1.5 degrees Celsius, which is really what's needed, we're talking about 55% lowering of emissions across the board in 10 years. And unless we're actually putting in place the infrastructure for that, we won't even meet that, right, Thanu? I mean, to achieve that drastic level of cuts, we need to be building the solar panels now, the wind turbines now. We need to be putting in place that infrastructure now, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, what this suggests is that all nations should be treating this like the emergency that it is. You know, to get the Earth back on track to 1.5 degree goal, countries must multiply their commitment level or the level at which they pledge to reduce their emissions 5 times the current rate outlined by the Paris Agreement. That means that global greenhouse gas emissions must fall at least 7.6% every year to remove 32 gigatons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So it's massive. And the reality is we've gotten here because of the lack of political will by nation states all across the world. And what we do not want to happen is for politicians to put up their hands and say, well, there's nothing we can do anyway. The will of the people, like 7.6 million people were on the streets in September. They are demanding change. And in all honesty, this is the kind of thing that causes a revolution. People across the world, young people across the world, they have a right to a future. They have a right to dignity. And at this rate, if world leaders do not meet to set new targets and to set extremely ambitious targets that they actually have to meet, we are going to be in an extremely bad place. And we already are in a bad place when you think about all of the climate impacts that are already happening.
And the COP25 meeting, which is the next UN climate conference, is taking place in Madrid, Spain, starting on December 2nd. It's going to go through December 13th. And I know you've attended several of these, Thanu. Does it seem to you that it's kind of pointless to continue doing these conferences when we just need drastic political change, changing the leadership of these countries so that we can start transitioning away from fossil fuels?
You know, I think that the fact that these reports have come out really, and it's come out a week before COP25, really is going to push world leaders of the COP to take it seriously. And I think that world leaders at this point should know there's not going to be an end to the kinds of mobilizations that we're going to see where people are really rising up, people are putting their bodies on the line, people are sitting in politicians' office to demand change. This is going to impact election results. And so we hope that the leaders who are going to COP25 take this seriously. I agree that we are not interested in having just another meeting after another where there are no actual commitments made. People need to take these reports seriously. This is factual evidence, and it requires a massive response. And one would hope an ideal out of the COP25 is actually a strategic emergency plan in order for us to really tackle the climate crisis and reduce emissions as soon as possible, starting in 2020.
The emissions gap singles out a number of nations, including ones where there are very overtly climate-denying leaders like the U.S., like Brazil under Jair Bolsonaro. The report pointed out that deforestation of the Amazon contributed dramatically to Brazil's footprint, and it has very specific conditions, including what China should be doing, such as banning all new coal-fired power plants, and even for India, transitioning from coal-fired power plants. But even developed nations like Japan and, of course, the United States very clearly lays out how these countries reduce their emissions. But of course, many of the leaders of these nations, such as Bolsonaro, such as Trump, such as Modi in India, would respond that economic growth is critical and that taking these actions would dampen economic growth. It's that same tired argument over and over again, right? I mean, this economic growth isn't benefiting the majority of people anyway.
Mm-hmm. The economic growth that people like Modi and Trump and Bolsonaro are talking about are very much in the short term. They are the plans of billionaires who only care about their money and the lobbyists who are going to keep them in power. This is not a long-term plan for economic growth. What is the point, in fact, of quote-unquote economic growth if by the end of the century, the majority of the world's population is wiped out? People really are not thinking about the severity of this. We are talking about the ways in which capitalism is not serving people all across the world, and what people like Trump and Modi and Bolsonaro are showing is that this is like the last gasp of capitalism. And frankly, it's a very dangerous one, because we're seeing the rise of the right from South Asia to the United States to Brazil to other parts of Latin America at the same time as we're dealing with this crisis. And so it really is going to take all of us to push for an intersectional approach to the climate crisis. Climate impacts every single issue of justice, from gender justice to racial justice to migrant justice. And we're going to see the severity of all of these issues really rise because of the inability of these leaders or supposed leaders to tackle the climate crisis.
Tanu, was there a silver lining in the report at all? Because we know that there are changes that are taking place on local levels, on municipal levels, cities in the U.S. and states, and the same is true in other parts of the world as well. And I believe the report did point out that there were a lot of, even if the actual places where progress on the climate is taking place may not do enough to push those numbers down, they offer a model, right, for larger scale projects?
I mean, I think the silver lining is that the world has woken up. Young people, this is one of the top priorities of young people around the globe. And I think that the push of civil society is going to be greater than before on climate. And it's really going to require that leaders step up in a way that they chose not to, because they didn't think that the public cared. And so I think that our job as advocates and activists is to really hone in on this, on public awareness, and really push for, on the ground mobilizations for people to really be pushing elected officials at all levels. Certainly we've seen on city levels and state levels here in the U.S., leaders really step up and keep their cities or towns or states in line with the Paris Climate Agreement. But I hope that this really shows that even they need to go beyond. And so I think the silver lining here is the kinds of mobilization and revolution that will come out of the realities that these reports are putting out.
Another deflection mechanism that leaders use is to point fingers at the other, very much a habit in the United States to point to China and say, well, China is the one that needs to reduce its emissions. China very conveniently will point to the U.S. and say that it's the U.S. that needs to point reduce its emissions. But if you look at per capita emissions, the U.S. is by far the biggest emitter in the world. Do you hope that Americans specifically take away from this report that it's on us, you know, when the whole world is watching?
Yeah, absolutely. A comparison here is not useful. The U.S. is the largest emitter of greenhouse gases. Certainly there are other countries as well, but like, it is the responsibility of the United States, it is the responsibility of the fossil fuel industry and the lobbyists that the U.S. leaders have uplifted over communities to take responsibility and accountability and to pay for this crisis. And Americans understand that their children are impacted, that there is no long-term projections for us as a society if we continue down this path. And I think that people are really waking up to the realities of
and
it.
The U.S. government's own reports on how climate change will impact infrastructure, will impact nuclear facilities, Superfund sites, show that there are agencies within this government that know they have to take these projections seriously, even if the person sitting in the White House doesn't, right? Which is just the height of irony.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely bizarre. And even it was actually around this time last year, right before Thanksgiving, that the U.S.'s own, the administration's own report about climate came out, and they tried to hide it. And so it's just completely bizarre that they would continue to actually offer, you know, tax reductions to fossil fuel companies over dealing with a reality. The thing about Donald Trump is that he knows that he's not going to be around 50 years from now. He's not going to be around 100 years from now. But what he does and what his administration does today and over this next year, and, you know, there is also a possibility over the next 4 years, really is going to have such irreversible damages. And the people most impacted are Black communities, brown communities, indigenous communities, low-income people, and there is no going back. We need to take this seriously, and we need to make these drastic changes now.
One of the other sort of silver linings in the UN report was that the cost of renewable energy sources and building infrastructure for renewable energy and the raw materials for it has actually gone down. I mean, on the one hand, of course, this is a great thing and can help transition our economies. On the other hand, people point out the demand for extraction of certain minerals that these technologies require often comes from poor countries, impacting poor economies. And so I want to just go back to what you were saying earlier, that it really does need to be a just transition, not just a transition, but a just transition, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like when we talk about climate justice, we're talking about worker rights, we're talking about migrant rights, we're talking about, you know, dignity and justice for all. And so, you know, it is a big deal that it is actually cheaper to you know, put in place solar. And we want that. And we also want to make sure that what we're doing is transitioning people across the world to jobs in 100% renewables that pay well, that are able to sustain families. And it is possible. It just requires political will.
Right. And so that's why, of course, a lot of people have been demanding the Green New Deal. Politicians are now waking up to that. So finally, let me ask you this, Thanu. While you and I are talking, of course, the campaign for the 2020 presidential race is in, you know, it has started earlier and earlier every year. This year, it's pretty early. And whoever occupies that spot in the White House is absolutely critical, as we have seen over the past few years, to the U.S. and where it stands on emissions. How do you assess the amount of time that debates have spent on the climate change issue, and also in general, the sort of campaign platforms of various, at least Democratic Party candidates, in focusing on climate change?
350.org is a C3, and so I have to answer this question carefully.
Sure.
But just to say that we are, you know, we have pushed all candidates to ensure that they have robust climate platforms. We are watching them closely. We have pushed for, you know, MSNBC and New York Times and all of the outlets that are hosting the debates to make sure that they are asking robust climate questions. There were a couple of debates where no climate questions were asked at all, which we found to be absolutely absurd. What we have seen, however, for example, in the last debates that happened in Atlanta, that the way in which candidates are speaking about climate is much more advanced than it used to be. All I can say is that it is like climate is a top issue in this election cycle. Voters are care about it. People who cannot vote, young people are calling on their elders to vote for their futures. And so that's really what we're going to be focusing on in order to ensure that, you know, people get to vote based on climate, and that the candidates really are putting out the most ambitious climate plans possible.
Thanu Ona, thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for 350, well, 350.org, I guess.
Yeah, it's 350.org, and it's 350.org on all social media platforms.
Thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
My guest has been Thanu Yakupitiage. She's the U.S. Communications Manager for the organization 350.org. We've been discussing the latest UN Emissions Gap Report. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.